You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
So with the preliminary cannabis referendum results announced last Friday and the final results set to be announced this Friday, I thought I would speak to a group that is calling for the laws surrounding drug use in New Zealand to be changed. Just Speak is a youth-powered movement for transformational change of criminal justice towards a fair, just and flourishing Aotearoa. I spoke to the group's director, Tanya Sawicki-Mead, about the preliminary results of the cannabis referendum. We spoke about what the next steps need to be for decriminalising and cannabis if the results do not flip at the end of the week, and why it is important for the new government to continue to focus on drug reform in New Zealand. I will just say a quick little apologies for the sound quality of this interview. It's a little bit crackly, so bear with. Gets better towards the end, towards the middle, sorry. I began by asking Tanya what Just Speak's position is on the preliminary referendum results.
We are obviously really disappointed and a bit heartbroken with the preliminary results on the cannabis referendum. I think it was such an important opportunity for us to change the system and create one that would put the well-being of people, put education, put health at the front of our response to drugs, which would have had an enormous impact in particular for Rangatahi Māori, who are over-criminalised and over-penalised for cannabis use. Currently in our society. We haven't given up hope yet. We do think that there's some chance that we thought this will get to on the specials given some of the demographic information we know about people who do use special votes. But I think that, you know, the biggest takeaway for us is that we have come too far in this conversation of the last year and a half about why our current system is failing, why criminalisation and prohibition have failed, to just stop here. And I think the challenge really is to this government is to figure out how brave they're going to be in creating a system that will actually work for New Zealanders.
So as you just said, you know, these are the preliminary results and the final results will be announced on Friday. And some people are certainly holding out for the special votes to be sure of the final result. Do you think this is something people should be focusing on, or should we already be looking into the future just in case it doesn't flip, because it is also said that it's not overly likely that it will?
Yeah, I mean, no one knows really, of course.
Totally.
This election because of COVID was unpredictable. Many people voted earlier, of course, so all of the assumptions that we previously might have made about turnout, who votes from where and who votes at all, given that this year, of course, was the first year. They very much streamlined the processes for people who wanted to enrol and vote on the same day. I think it is a long shot, obviously. We know that we need to get about 68% of the cannabis referendum votes as yes votes to change the result. But we do, you know, I guess we can give ourselves those 3 days and hope, and then, you know, come the following Monday, it's all about what happens next.
So I just wanted to talk a little bit about what needs to change in terms of New Zealand's law around cannabis. If we don't get the yes vote and this isn't the bill that's on the table anymore, what needs to change?
Frankly, I think that the government should take the cannabis legalisation and control bill that they put out to referendum and simply pass it with the supermajority that they now have, given that it is a pretty solid, well-researched and well-thought-out piece of legislation. To me, that is the best and most effective method that we have for addressing the harms of criminalisation and of prohibition and of ensuring that we protect people from dangerous substances, which is the danger of decriminalisation, that we have no control over supply. Andrew Little has commented, of course, that is not on the cards for them. He is no longer now the Minister of Justice, so I don't know if that changes things. But certainly we would want at least the review of the Misuse of Drugs Act, which happened about a year ago, to be revisited, because while that made some good headway and that police now have to prove it's in the public interest to prosecute someone for possession of drugs, the bias that we see playing out and the racism that we see playing out in police decision-making, where Māori is still much more likely to be criminalised for drug use than Pākehā, it remains a problem. So that problem has not gone away with decriminalisation, and I don't see under the current settings how it can. So I think that MODA, the Misuse of Drugs Act, really needs to be first on the table. But also we need the conversation around the referendum, I think, made it clear to many, many people, even those who might have voted no, that the status quo is not working. And we can't keep going as we're going, having had this conversation in which we got over the stigma and the shame of people talking about drug use, about the shame that is associated with that, and about the lack of support that's available. So a really important first step would be to increase the amount of funding for treatment and prevention programs and increase the amount of alternative resolutions that are available to judges and to the courts in the criminal justice system to reduce the harm that criminalisation does. So to divert people out of the justice system and into treatment and back into the community. Because sending people to prison or giving them a conviction and a community sentence that will sit with them for the rest of their life does nothing to address or reduce the harm of drug usage, and it creates a whole bunch of harm in and of itself that sits with a person for their lifetime. So I think the government has an opportunity now to do something really brave and really courageous that would actually make a huge impact for groups of people who are suffering under this current law, and I would include people who use medicinal cannabis in that group as well. Where under the current system, medicinal cannabis is very expensive to access, and in some cases not the appropriate substance for them. And really it's up to them about how willing they are to be courageous and to do the right thing.
On that point about the government being courageous, I know you mentioned that Andrew Little has said that decriminalisation of cannabis won't be on the table because the public has voted, and if it votes no, then we should respect that. Do you think as well the combination of that stance and also COVID-19 being a huge governmental focus at the moment may mean that drug reform is sort of pushed to the back of the line when it comes to the progression that the government could make in the next term?
Yeah, I think the frustrating thing is that these things are not mutually exclusive, that we know that the stress and anxiety that was caused by COVID-19 and the economic pain that may come as a result, or you know, we are already feeling, will exacerbate existing social issues. So it is prudent, I think, to focus on the ways in which our current system criminalises people who are struggling with their mental health, struggling with addiction, in order to make sure that we can weather the storm better together. And, you know, drug law reform is one part of that. There are many other parts, I think, of that, but I certainly think that is a really appropriate one and an important one. I don't think that there is any reason for a government with the courage of its convictions to say that just because a referendum, which frankly, in my view, is a terrible process for something this complicated, because a referendum didn't reach 50%, that there is no mandate. Public opinion is not a fixed and stable thing. You know, people's attitudes and beliefs around particularly complex issues like drug law reforms will change when political leaders show courage and show us the way that we can go, the direction that we can go in. And I think that it's, you know, irresponsible to say, oh, well, we asked a pretty confusing and simple question and then didn't really enter into a dialogue about it, didn't advocate for why this would be a better position. And I'm speaking here of, you know, a number of our political leaders. And then when misinformation and outright lies then swept into the vacuum that was left by that lack of leadership, people threw up their hands and said, oh, well, you know, the public are against it. I think that's a deeply simplistic reading of what happened in this debate. And I also think that regardless of whether a majority of people support it or not, at the moment our current laws are racist and are failing, do nothing to address the harm of drugs that are already in communities and create more harm in and of themselves. So, yeah, I think the argument that this isn't a priority is really just a political one born out of a lack of courage. And I do hope that the new team that we have on justice reform will get together to figure out what they can do now to make a difference.
So just finally, I just wanted to touch on that point you made about referenda not necessarily being the best way to go about a discussion when it comes to drug reform. How would you like to see the discussions around drug reform progress? What do people need to ensure that they're informed in a, you know, a correct and balanced way?
Well, for starters, I think the challenge that we face with drug law reform is that we're debating this in a context where we've had, you know, 30 or so years of a rhetoric around the war on drugs as if that's a thing that works, which it does not. But I think, you know, people's attitudes and beliefs have been shaped by them. So we're working against, or we're having to turn around beliefs and attitudes about drugs and drug laws that are not grounded in evidence, but have been, you know, have dominated the discourse for the last 30 years. So you have your work cut out for you, I think, to really shift how people see the role of the regulation of drugs in our communities. The problem with the simplistic, with the referendum, of course, is that people can't indicate nuance. They can't say, well, actually, I do support alternative resolutions for people in the criminal justice system because I can see that putting them in prison does nothing to help them with their drug addiction. Oh, but I'm worried about the availability of cannabis in my community if it's legal. That's an understandable anxiety to have. But the problem with a referendum is you don't get to communicate that complexity. You get yes or no. And I think that in order to walk people through what is, you know, quite a confronting, but ultimately I think much more safe and much more responsible system, you know, you need time and you need faith and you need leadership. You know, you need people to go out there and advocate for why the law that the officials have written is the best response to the status quo. And that's really what was missing in this referendum process.
That was Tania Sawicki-Mead from Just Speak, speaking on the preliminary cannabis referendum results.
That was a 95BFM podcast. To hear more, head to 95BFM.com/bcasts.